Sorry, you missed it.
We decided a couple of things. The first one is that the book of James was written by James. Seems obvious, but there were a lot of different Jameses who were potential candidates. And we figured out that this was James, the brother of Jesus, or the half-brother of Jesus, because Jesus wasn't Joseph's natural son. So it was that, not any of the other Jameses. We decided that James was written to the Jews of the dispersion, all those Jewish people who have been flung out to various places around the world. All sorts of things had happened persecution-wise, and they'd been spread out all over the place. So they're people who are struggling with persecution and trials and difficulties. We decided also that the objective of James is to encourage believers to become mature believers. Be mature. So now we come into the first piece of good, strong advice, good, strong instruction from James, the man who always gives instructions, never makes suggestions. He's saying, you've got to do this. That's James. So we'll read from James chapter 1, verses 2 to 12. It says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. Now, how many of you have managed to master that sentence? Count it joy when stuff goes wrong. Stuff goes wrong, our immediate reaction is, oh, joy! No, it's a tough one. And James is like this all the way through. It's hard stuff all the way through. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith, without doubting. For he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. Let the lowly brother glory in his exaltation, but the rich in his humiliation. Because as a flower of the field, he will pass away. For no sooner has the sun risen with a burning heat than it withers the grass, its flower falls, and its beautiful appearance perishes. So the rich man will also fade away in his pursuits. Blessed is the man who endures temptation. For when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him." I hope just reading through that 10-verse passage makes it very, very clear why I chose Count Your Blessings as a hymn today. I mean, it is the same message written in two different ways, but it's the same thing. Whenever stuff goes wrong, remember. Stand fast in the knowledge that God has blessed you, that God's with you, that God's doing something from all of these trials. He's going to produce something. You've heard the phrase, I'm sure, when life gives you lemons, what do you do? Make lemonade. Yeah? No? I also heard it said, get out the gin and tonic. But either way, when life gives you difficult circumstances, we need to be able to find a way to turn it into something good, something positive, something sweeter than it at first appears, something that where we can find the redeeming features in the difficulties and in the trials. Somehow we need to be able to turn it around. Tom, the next one, please. So our message today is all about turning trials into triumphs. Woohoo! Yeah. And when you look at this passage, there are four instructions. I call them imperatives because, you know, grammatically, do you know? Some of you don't know grammar, do you? I'm going to have to start a grammar course one of these days. There is an imperative form of a verb or of a word. And it's when it's an order. It's an imperative. It's imperative. You've got to do it. It's not a request. It's an order. And James uses four of them in that passage that we've just read from verse 2 to 12. The ones that he uses are count. That's the first one. Count it all joy. The second one is know. You've got to know. No, just stay where you are, Tom. Don't worry about it. The third one is let. And the fourth one is ask. And all four of those are imperatives within that passage in James. So let's have a look through them one by one. The first one is count. It says, count it all joy when you enter or when you fall into various trials. In the King James, diverse temptations. Love that phrase. Count it all joy. Have a joyful attitude. It's not always easy to have a joyful attitude. Sometimes it's not easy because we've had a killer punch, you know, a really heavy blow. And that can take away our joy. Sometimes our joy gets ground down slowly on a daily basis. But whichever way it works, a joyful attitude is an attitude that will lift you up. A lack of a joyful attitude will set you on a downward path. So really it's a case of choosing which way we go. Now, James doesn't say choose, he says count. It all joy. Count it all joy. This is a term from bookkeeping, from accountancy. You know the double entry bookkeeping system? Some of you will, some of you won't. Some of you just only know, put it into the computer. Some of you know that if you have a debit in one account, you have to have a credit in another account. That's what this term is talking about. When James says, count it all joy, he's saying, mark it in the positive column on your ledger, when you are adding up the experiences of your life, count this trial as a positive, as a credit. You are gaining something. You are not losing something. Now, I understand that it's sometimes difficult when we're in the situation to feel that way and to see that joy. But that's what James is asking us to do. To find the joyful approach to the difficulties of life. If you are a believer and you are expecting your Christian life to be easy, you're in for a shock. Jesus told his disciples, didn't he, in John 16, 33, he said, in the world, you will have tribulation. It's definite. You will. You shall. It will happen. Have tribulation. Paul told his converts in Acts chapter 14, verse 22, we must through much tribulation enter into the kingdom of God. You know, if you became a Christian so that nothing would ever go wrong again, you did it for the wrong reason and you're going to be really disappointed. So sorry. Is anyone disappointed? Marjorie, you can't always expect everything to go your way. Some trials come simply because we're human. In this world, there is sickness. There are accidents. There are disappointments. There are tragedies. There are all sorts of things that happen just because we're in a fallen world, in an imperfect world. There are some things that come as trials because we're Christians. You know, persecution is specific. isn't it? It's a trial, it's a persecution because of your faith. Because you believe this, because you hold that position, there will be that trial or that opposition. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial that tries you as though something strange had happened to you. That's 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 12. You know, there is an enemy in the world, and he and everything around us is built for opposition. This term here says, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. And I don't want you to get the feeling that you fall into a trial the way you fall into a temptation or a sin. You know, it's not that. The word fall into, that is translated fall into, actually just means encounter or come across. So count it all joy when you come across various temptations, when you encounter various temptations. And it says that word various or diverse, it says divers in the King James. It means very, very coloured. You know, like in plants, you get variegated leaves. Yeah, that's the same sort of word. It's various, very coloured. Peter used the same word in 1 Peter 1:6 when he talked about being in heaviness because of manifold or various or variegated temptations. The trials of life, of course, are not all the same. They're variegated. Is anyone a knitter here? You've got a knitter? Well, at least one. Two. Fantastic. Have you ever knitted with variegated yarn? And you get this ball of yarn and you start knitting, and what comes out? All sorts or fairer. Exactly. You can get some balls of yarn that are pure random. And you get, you know, blocks of orange, and then it turns into yellow, and then it goes into green or whatever. Pure random. But you can also get those ones that are a fake ferrule. Now, ferrule knitting is a nightmare. You can have 7 or 8 strands of yarn all on the go at the same time, and it's a nightmare. It's a horrible thing to do. I hate it. I can't do it. But there are some forms of yarn that when you knit them up, they magically look just like ferrule. Magic. I love those. I like those ones. That's sort of what's going on here. When you get into these trials, these variegated trials, you are in a trial and it's difficult and it can be unpleasant. But when you look back on it, very often you'll find that all the different colours and all the different shades of your experience have magically come together to form a ferrule jumper. You know, something that makes sense. When you were in it, it didn't make any sense at all. It looked like a load of chaos. But when you look back, you see, actually, that was pretty good. I can see how all that goes together now. I can see how all the bits and pieces fit. Now, it's good for us to look back and see how all the bits and pieces fit. That's good. But what James asks us to do is to go one step further. Not go through this experience feeling chaotic and sad and angry and mad and upset and depressed and feeling all those things that we sometimes feel when we get into trials. James wants us not to go through that whole process of horribleness. He says, and then later come back and see the joy, see the beauty. He's encouraging us to see the beauty even when we're in it. Not just looking backwards and saying, oh, yeah, I see it. But while we're actually in it, wow. You have to be pretty clever to see the pattern when you're actually in it. Have you ever been to a place like Turkey or Tunisia or somewhere? And they make weavings, tapestries or rugs or something. Yeah. Have you looked at them from the back ever? Does it make any sense from the back? None whatsoever. But from the front, from the top, it makes perfect sense. Beautiful patterns, beautiful pictures. Well, the situation that we're in is that we, being on earth, are looking at our trial from the bottom. And what James is asking us to do is to turn that round and look at our trial from the top. Don't look at the bottom of the rug, but find a way to pull yourself out of that mess of knots and nonsense that's underneath a beautiful rug or a beautiful tapestry, and find a way to turn the tapestry around and look at it from the other side. That's what James wants us to do. And it's maturity that allows us to do that. Well, our outlook determines the outcome, doesn't it? To end with joy, we need to begin with joy. But how can we do that? How can we really rejoice in the middle of all the trials? Well, James's second imperative, after we do this first counting, think about it, consider it, work out, is this good or is this bad? What? Do that counting up, do the accounting process. After that, the next thing, step two, is know. Have confidence, have understanding. James says, know. This is in verse 3 of that passage that we read. Excuse me. Sorry, no, this doesn't make any sense to me. It's knowing. What do Christians know that makes it easier for us to face trials and to benefit from them? Well, firstly, we know that faith is always tested. We know that we are not in a unique position, that we are tested in common with everybody else. When God called Abraham to live by faith, he tested him to increase his faith. God always tests us to bring out the best. Of course, the enemy, Satan, tempts us to bring out our worst, but God tests us to bring out our best. We need also to know that testing works for us, ultimately, and not against us. The word trying, as in the trying of your faith, the testing of your faith, the trying of your faith, works patience or produces patience. In 1 Peter 1, 7, the trial of your faith being much more precious than that of gold. The trying of your faith is much more precious than that of gold. You know, when you think of a gold prospector, you know, these old guys that used to be out in the middle of nowhere digging around in the bush, yeah, looking a bit like Lee Marvin, you know the ones. They would get a little bit of gold and they would bring it to the assayer's office. And that word assayer means trier, the one who tries, the one who tests. They bring it to the assayer's office, and that little bit of gold, however much it was, or maybe a tiny bit of dust or a couple of nuggets or whatever, the assayer would look at them and test them, put them in chemicals and test them out. Now, that little bit there of gold was probably not worth very much at all, maybe a few dollars. But when the assayer looked at them, he would be able to say, this is a little bit of gold, but it indicates a larger amount of gold still there. So that this little bit of gold, if you sold it today, might be worth 20 quids. But the value of the assayer is not 20 pounds, it's the 50 billion pounds worth of gold that he can tell is still in the mountain because of the little bit that you brought to him. What am I telling you? You have a trier, you have a test, you go with this little bit. If you have an understanding heart, you will realize that the value of the trial is not just in the little bits, but it's in what it points to. And what it points to is your maturity. What it points to is the growth of your life, your church, your family, the kingdom of God on earth, and your home eternally in heaven. That little bit of trial there little bit. Points to a whole huge bit of your life and your victory in Christ. I think that's quite clever. The assayer's office. So if you can turn your thinking from saying, I'm going through a trial, I'm going through a test, and it's depressing me, or it's hurting me, or it's upsetting me, if you can change from that, and see with an understanding mind, you will be able to say, I'm going through a trial at the moment. Wow, what glory is coming. Yeah? Instead of saying, I'm going through a trial at the moment, and it's really upsetting me. It's, I'm going through a trial at the moment, but look at the big weight of glory, the big reserve of gold that God has for me. That's a mind that understands what trials are all about. You're not looking happy. I can only assume you're not looking happy because you're still looking at the little bits of gold over here. Everybody look over here. Yes! The big gold. Yeah, the value, the product, the end result. Jesus, it says about Jesus that he endured the cross, despising the shame. Why? For the joy that was set before him. He went through the trial. He went through the difficulty. But his eyes were not on the trial. His eyes were on the joy that was set before him. Trials are used to help us mature. And if we understand that, we take our eyes off of the trial and put them onto the maturity. Trials are to help us understand our faith. And if we understand that, we take our eyes off of the trial and fix our eyes on our growing faith. And so on, and so on, and so on. The trying of your faith produces patience. Oh, don't you love it? Don't you love patience? Yeah, I think I said last week that we tend not to practice patience so much as practicing impatience, don't we? Lord, help me to be more patient. Stupid thing to say, firstly. Never, ever, ever say that. Because if you say, Lord, give me patience, you're actually saying, Lord, give me a test of my faith. Because the only way to get patience is to have your faith tested. But okay, let's say, Lord, give me patience. So you step out, and I said this last week, I believe. You step out of the house and